gentlemen, and welcome to InFlight Entertainment's Filmmakers Lounge. And this week we have a family member, actually, Mark Elias. So Mark have a feature film out called Boy Makes Girl. Very awesome film. I keep people in suspense. And I'm happy to have him as a guest in the lounge today to talk about his process and and enlighten us with a little bit of sage wisdom to filmmakers that's trying to get to where he is, far as conception to finished product. And we're happy to have him here today. What's up, Mark?
Hey, man. How's it going?
Cool, man. Happy to have you on. And congratulations on the new film. I had a chance to watch it the other day. I can't say enough good things about it. I mean, you, the cast, crew, did such an awesome job telling the story. And I just want to give a tip of a hat to you, because I know you have indeed a lot of hats with this project.
Thank you. It is definitely a juggling act that I think you just have to be willing to do it, because there's definitely like a moment on set where you're transitioning from acting to stepping behind the camera, and you're talking about, you know, the main character I'm playing, his name is Aaron, and I would go behind the camera and be like, so we actually need Aaron to do this, whatever. People are looking at me like, you doing this. I'm like, I mean, that's Aaron who's doing that. You're either like director role. You just switch hats so fast. You have to be able to like compartmentalize and transition to keep the process moving.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. We're going to stick a pin in that, because that's an interesting conversation to get into. All right. So before we get into that, tell the world a little bit about yourself, or what's your superhero origin story, and break it down.
I mean, I've been an actor for over 15 years now. I started just moving to LA and not really knowing anybody, so trying to build acting credits. And then over time, I'd always liked to write and like write adventure stories when I was a kid of myself and my brothers. And so I'd always enjoyed that. And I had a director who encouraged me to write. And I just really, it was very natural for me to be able to also create your own content. Is can always be a vehicle for you. So I kind of doubly motivated with the intention of creating content I could be in. Almost about 8 years ago, we had crowdfunded, not a huge budget, but we crowdfunded enough money to shoot a feature on a shoestring budget and played some festivals and did pretty well. And then I was so inspired by that I had been toying with this new idea, which is like a science fiction love story called Boy Makes Girl. Just my fascination with artificial intelligence and the role it can play in society, both positive and negative for us. So it's science fiction drama, but it's not aliens attacking the earth at all. And so that was the second one that I had decided, well, I think I can crowdfund this. And for me, it's always about the story. It's never about the budget. In fact, I like finding those great indie films where it's just interesting, unique relationships. And the budget doesn't matter to me, as long as obviously it looks good and sounds good. But I don't need to have huge sweeping expose, 30-minute introduction shots, you know, or these crazy angled stuff or underwater shots. I'm more about like where's the story and what are the relationships and the arcs taking us. So that's where I'm coming from. And so this was one that I thought this one can be done reasonably, and we managed to pull it off and make it look incredible, especially for what our budget was. But then, so that's, you know, that's come out, and then I got on a big Fox show for a while, and that raised my cachet. And so then now I've moved into the actual finding investors world and putting films together that way. So it's pretty great step on the journey. I mean, I didn't really expect to get such positive reviews that we've been getting. And that's kind of overwhelming a little bit at times, but also the years of work that you put into it, you can always reflect on that and be like, yeah, no, I think I deserve a positive review.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, this movie, again, congrats, because not only does the movie touch, like you're saying, on a lot of familiar subjects, you know, like AI and the human connection with AI and our relationship with AI and the God complex, so to speak. I got a little bit of that too. What I really like about this particular story is it also have a connection. It also has heart. And I think what really keeps a story, especially independent story, that some, I'm going to say a lot, but some filmmakers lose, is like the heart have to be there. Like the story have to have like the connectivity within what you're watching, you know, have to resonate with whoever watches it. Meaning like the heart of the story have to be there, no matter how much the plot veers left, right, up, down, side to side. If the heart isn't there, like the story is really lost. And that's what I love about this particular story. Like the heart of the movie was never compromised. And I actually tip my hat to, you know, the writing, which you wrote the script and actors that maintained it.
Yeah. I just go back to talking about relationships. What the story is really about is just that kind of the growth that somebody has. And there's a sort of like the our main character is on the autism spectrum, and we didn't put a finger on it too specifically because it's such a wide spectrum, and there's people that they have a much tougher time struggling and functioning in society than others do. So but having that as an element that is a bit of my past, but also allowing that person to have the innocence and naivete of almost a childlike way of being able to be smart enough to build a robot, but also having this unknown social world that he has to walk into. It really allows us to like stay with him on that journey. And it really is the story of love at the end of the day. But one of the things about science fiction that I always kind of is a thing is it kind of shows a mirror to society in some way. And so there was like kind of a balance, and like, I don't want to go too crazy in the science fiction world of how a robot gets built, because it's not really about that.
Right.
You wanted to stick to the core of what that story is, and having that heart and that through line of finding love, definitely for a first time, and then how that ends up was really the core, like sticking to that core and not getting too lost in the X's and O's of the programming language, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you pulled it off well. So congrats on that. I will be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to this particular actor in your movie, Paul Dooley. Okay, so I geeked out a little bit when I seen him, because Popeye is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I'm like, how did Mark nab Wimpy? Like, what is going on here? Like, family is holding secrets. Oh my God. So that's my geek out moment right there. So geek moment's done. All right, so getting back. all right, now my composure's back. All right, so getting back. So about the cast, to break down the cast, man, because you all did an amazing job.
You know, my co-producer, who I'd worked with on Golden Boy, he'd been acting in the business forever, and he has a lot of relationships he kind of brings to the projects. And he's known Paul Dooley and his wife, Winnie, and their children for years now. He worked on a pilot that I think Paul's wife wrote or Paul's daughter wrote. And so he got to know them on like on a personal level. And when I had brought him this script, we talked about some people that would be right for it. And he immediately was like, Paul Dooley would be great. And I was like, wow, he could really, can he, I mean, does, would he do it? Is he, too, I mean, cause he was 91, I think, when we shot it. And so you never know, like somebody's 91, it's like, well, where are they? Like, are they still here? And I mean, he's not even like, doesn't miss a beat, was never really even off the script. Like it was pretty, I mean, and then he was there until like 11 at night sometimes, where we'd shoot him out early and be like, you can go home, you know? And he's like, I just want to stay. And so it was fascinating because he's on it. It was incredible. And then for the other actors, Megan Holloway, our wonderful, Emma, the robot, she was, we were in a theater company together, and we had done a play reading. And we had talked to some other people, and when we had her in for like a table read, we just were kind of like, yeah, like she works. It's great. Like there's already a connection. We had, I think the play reading we had done before, the roles had a similar dynamic. So when we brought her in to read and then to the callback, it was like, we kind of knew the whole time in a way. You're like, yeah, I'm like really sure that she's the one. I mean, those were really the big roles. I think John Billingsley, who was in about 100 episodes of Star Trek Enterprise.
Yes.
He was a friend of mine, was the casting director, I think at MGM, for all those Star Trek shows for years. And we had lunch and I told him about this project, and he's a good friend of John Billingsley. And I sent him the script and I thought, this isn't somebody that we have a personal relationship with. They probably could just say, I don't care. And he liked the script so much. So he was willing to do it. And we got to work with him. And so
nice.
That was pretty, he's pretty great. I mean, everything you see him in, you're just like, the guy's just Swiss Army knife of whatever he's doing. And so that was really the big roles. The two dates we went on, our co-producer knew the first girl, Stephanie, who opens the film with Aaron. And we auditioned her, and it was like, we liked her for a couple things, and it kind of shook out that she was right for that. And then Megan West, who was the second girl that he goes on a date with, she was on an episode of 911. I was doing 911 Lone Star, and somebody was making a movie, and they cast the two of us as the leads and brought some of the other 911 actors on that project. So she and I actually played the leads in a film, and I had just come off that with her, and she's just a great actress. Like she can make anything work and make it sting. And so nice. I thought she just happened to be really right for this. And she came in that night and just knocked it out of the park. So we have a good, it's always good to be able to reach out to the actors that you know, or even write for, and have them want to come on board and like the content, like the material. Right. The coffee shop owner, Sandra McLean, she's just great. Like I wrote it. I had her in mind when I wrote it, and I went to my director and producer at the time. Was like, it'd be great to get her. I wrote it for her. We worked with her before, and they were like, yeah, we'll talk to her. We'll get her to do it. And she came on board too. So it just really came together. And then a bunch of the other actors were just people that we knew that we worked with before. And I was like, hey, I have this role. Would you come do it? Yeah. So, we just stacked a cast with basically reaching out to our network. And the only one, like I said, was John Billingsley, which was, both him and Paul Dooley wanted to do it based on the script, which was a great sign for us.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, it's a testament to your writing, man. Like if the script is strong, if you build it, there will come, right? I guess that's the whole thing. All right. So going back to what you were saying with wearing the dual hat of actor director. So, and I see you share like directing credit with another person.
Yeah, Mark David, who's also our cinematographer, stepped up for a couple of days there where it got busy. And was able to keep the ship running. So, I mean, that guy's he's multi-talented. He's got multiple hats. Really great DP, man. I mean,
yeah, some great looking scenes, definitely. Yeah,
he really. I mean, our production designer Katie Powers was incredible. She made stuff happen that you just were like, I don't even know. She was a magician, and then Mark David would just, man, he's just great DP, man. He just made angles and shots work that you don't even think about. I mean, because you're wearing so many other hats, it's like, it's great to have somebody that you know. You don't have to worry about what they're doing because it'll make sense when you get to editing and all that, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. That's like, you know, that's some of the heavy lifting right there. Right?
Yeah.
How many days? Collectively, because I know it's never like, oh, it was like so many straight days of shooting here.
13 days. Actual filming, you know, I think we was like 5 days on, 2 days off. And then we had to go back and grab another scene. So it was like 13 and a half days.
Oh, cool.
There was days where we were just ripping through it. And it's, you have to just be, I think, on point. As an actor, just to know where you're at, to be able to drop into anything at any time. And that was part of it with Aaron, was he does have this transition. You know, one way that we showed it was going from where he doesn't use contractions to where he's able to use contractions in the end, and where he becomes more and more sort of, he busts out of his shell more and become more social, and is easier for him to make eye contact and feel emotions. And so I had to map that out to know what scene we're at and know at what point he's sort of on that path to the final thing of where he's more comfortable now, where he's actually speaking in public. And then that's something to just be aware of. It's a great challenge for an actor. You know, I knew it was something that was going to be a great challenge, but also I was just excited to be doing, you know, something that resonated with me. Mm-hmm.
And great job. I mean, the journey was, you know, it was crystal clear, you know, and you and your performance conveyed it, you know, which, and my hat's off to you on that. And also, since me and Mark is in this, we live in the same hood, so I had to give you ask some location questions. So how did you manage to get in the zoo? Well, I mean, it's easy to. Okay, how did you get the zoo shots?
Man, I don't know what I can say here. We stole shots.
Okay. Hey, like, whatever, gorilla, man. That's how you do it.
We went in and, yeah, I mean, so the zoo was actually. That was one where there was some pushback. How are we going to do that? And I was like, no, we can do some stuff with handheld camera enough that it's like any other tourist there.
Right.
It's all MOS, mm-hmm. which for those who don't know, it's basically means you're going to be using without sound because there's voiceover over it. So I'm like, all we need to do is get in there. Mm-hmm. Get in that emotional spot where what he's going through in those moments, capture that footage and get out.
Right. No, it was done very well.
It really worked in the mall too. We did that in the mall. Anything you see where you're like, huh, well, how do they do that? It's like, we probably just did it without people looking.
Yeah. A gorilla, man. That's, hey, this is the independent filmmakers.
I'm not even apologizing about it. At this point, you're like, this is just what you have to do.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. You make it work. You made it work. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Okay. So 13 days, right, in the can. Everything's cut, ready to rock. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the journey of where it is now with, you know, like the distribution and all that good stuff. Like, cause that's the meat of what, you know, a lot of filmmakers, like, they get to the point Whereas like, okay, it's done. Where do I go from here? Kind of situation.
So the first thing I would say about any of this is, as like an indie filmmaker, the biggest challenge is just saying, I'm going to make this film. Because once you say that, everything else doesn't matter. Like, oh, you can't make it for that budget. Okay, but we can, sure. you can't get that person. Sure, if we reach out to them and they want to do it, they will do it. You can't shoot there. Yeah, we can. We can figure out a way to do it. It's always, oh, well, you can't, you don't even have enough money. It's always money. And you're like, sure, but we can still, it's, so it's always the hardest thing is just saying, I'm going to make this film. I mean, we shot it in the summer of 2019 for 13 days. So in the span of 3 weeks, you basically shot a film and got it in the can. Then I landed on that show, and then also that was on season one of that. And then the show ended and the pandemic started. So it's then a process of there's no money. I go looking for some money, of course, because it's just what I guess I do now. And then we found this great editor, Clinton, who I think he was connected a friend of a friend, and he wanted to do it and really liked what he saw. So he worked with us, and that obviously takes time because there's people are doing it. You know, they've got other things they have to handle as well. And then there was, well, we need these VFX and the green screen stuff. And so there needed to be some of a budget for that. And then who's going to do it? And then getting it done the right way. And then you've got that. Then you have to find, you know, everything. Like, you got somebody who's going to do the score. And we got this incredible guy, Alejandro, he's in Mexico City. I think he was just incredible.
Yeah, he was great.
Music. I mean, this guy's he's just really talented. And then this guy, James Higgin, was our sound designer. And he's like up in the Bay Area, and something he just really liked it and resonated. We had great conversations, and we came on board. Pieces just, it took a while. Obviously it's now 2023, but you just keep chipping away at whatever that next step is. How can I do that to the best of my ability to get it as high quality as we can? And then submitting at the festivals, and then even like editing the credits, and then somebody left, and then I'm here learning Adobe Premiere Pro and learning how to edit the credit sequence.
Right.
And so it's a lot of moving parts and a lot of like passing a hard drive around, and making sure XYZ is done. And then you can get a trailer cut. And luckily I connected with this really talented guy up in Canada who I'd just been up there shooting another movie. And so, piece by piece, it seems like it's never going to end. And then all of a sudden you start getting to festivals and you start winning awards. And then it starts to be like, well, that's what it's worth it for that, you know?
Yeah, right on. Yeah, you're right. And I think that's the driving force. It's a separation from people who says, I want to do it, and the person that says, I'm doing it. Because I come across a lot of, filmmakers, that have awesome like concepts, ideas, scripts even, but just sit on it. They sit on it because they looking for the right DP, you're looking for the right, or that DP is looking for the right camera package that might cost this much, because they're in the weeds of how it looks, the execution of it, right? It's like, okay, like I get that, but if you're just sitting on it waiting for the perfect resources that you want to tell the story, then it's never going to be told. Like opposite, like you were saying, like all these no's, like, okay, well, we're going to make it work because the story is important. The story can be told however way, or however, like even like the resources or lack of resources is not going to stop the story from happening. And I just come across a lot of filmmakers that just give that the lack of resources that they want, air quotes, an excuse to not do it. You know what I mean? I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, because there's part of it is like the sort of procrastination to give yourself a reason to not do it. There's a sort of like escape hatch that a lot of people I know, it's like, well, I'm still rewriting it. And you're like, there's a point in which you're rewriting it because you're scared of the next step. And part of it is when you get a director on board or somebody comes on board, the script is going to change. So it needs to be in a place where you like it and want to move forward with it. And then there's a time in which it doesn't make sense to keep making edits, because I say you give yourself a year. That project has a shelf life of a year, because I'm a big believer in momentum. And if in a year you aren't making any progress to getting it off the ground in some capacity, you got to cut bait and move on, because all you're doing is bogging yourself down in failures or something along. You're not picking up the next step of the process. Like even now I have a script and you always want to tinker with it, but if there's no money behind it, then there's no point in me tinkering on something that I'm not going to move forward with. So you got, I mean, it's kind of about giving yourself deadlines and calling yourself out on what you're afraid of and what the fear is. Like the fear for me was I've crowdfunded two features. Now the next step is go find investors, go pitch investors. And that was, don't get stuck in your comfort zone of making crowdfunded features. But there's nothing wrong with that. It's just you want to grow and you want to get to the next level, and you have to be able to afford bigger stars if you want to level up as well. So much of that I think is just about recognition of like what is the process to attack it from a business standpoint and give yourself a timeline, because momentum is sort of everything.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And also is putting in work and doing it, right? I mean, it's funny. So many, you know, film festivals I've gone to now, you know, feature shot on an iPhone. I mean, but it's like, okay, like this person wanted to tell this story so bad. He wanted to get out to the world with such urgency that he used his iPhone to tell this story that he believed in. You know, so it's like you have that. And so it's like, okay. Then you have on the other opposite end of the spectrum, you have that filmmaker I was telling you about that just kind of sitting on their hands waiting for, you know, that red to rent that, you know, that Alexa, you know, trying to get that crane, you know, because it's also a crane shot he want to do for this scene. But if he can't do it, he'd rather not, you know, try to get the story up because there's things that he want to do visually. You know, it's like standing in that middle.
Nobody's going to see that film for the crane shot. Like if you, to your point, what you just said is he made it, he believed in that story. And that's the key. It's like, if you believe in the story that you're telling, then it's a strong story that you are showing the world that we don't care if it was shot on an iPhone. And if somebody cares that it was shot on an iPhone, then it's something with that person that they need to deal with, because there's like Sean Baker made that movie Tangerine that was in Sundance, and he shot that on an iPhone. So exactly. You can't tell me that it's not, it's always about the story. It's always about the characters and the relationship and the story. So there's not an excuse. Do a crowdfunding campaign to raise the money and put it, allocate it to the places where you want, but please don't allocate a huge amount of budget to one crane shot. You
know? you're not at, you know, Scorsese status yet. So you have to work your way up to the crane. You know, like start handheld, work your way up to the crane. All right. So in closing, any words of wisdom based off of your journey, you know, from, you know, the many hats that you use to bring Boy Makes Girl to the world.
I think for me, and I can only speak from my journey, is it's starting with the idea that you wake up with and it's still interesting to you and fascinating to you day after day. It's not just an idea that you had one day. So it sticks with you and you want to explore it and you live in that 30,000 foot view of what is this going to be like. And then you dive in, and it doesn't matter about anything else but making that script as strong as it is and then exploring it. And then you get excited because it opens up all these things and the script is fantastic and you really believe in something about it. And then you can go to the 30,000 foot view and look at what's the next step. And this is what I have to do is raise money. And then you zoom in and drop down into that. And then that's what you focus on. And that's what I've learned is how I've been able to do these is you just know that there's a process and it doesn't matter what you don't know. It's that you're going to figure it out step by step and focus on just that. Because if you try and do everything at once, there's going to be a loss of the script will end up cutting corners or you're going to forget about this and you have to set aside time for acting preparation. So all you have to do is plan and execute. And that's where I'm at with what I've learned about all this. Yeah. And you build that momentum and then you get laurels and then you've worked with great actors and then people want to know what you have coming next. And then somebody contacts you about funding a film. It doesn't happen overnight, but that's what you can build to. That's my advice from what I have learned.
Right. And that's great advice, man. And we definitely appreciate the sage wisdom you have to give to everyone at the Filmmakers Lounge. Again, Mark, thanks for taking time to, talk. The movie's awesome. Everyone, check out Boy Makes Girl. Where can they see this? I have it on Apple, but any other places people can view this film?
Yeah, it's on iTunes and we have it on Amazon. I literally just typed into Google Amazon Prime Boy Makes Girl and the link came up.
Nice.
And I think you could probably do that with iTunes now at this point, but that's that's how anybody can get out there and watch it.
Nice. Yes. So definitely check it out, everyone. Boy Makes Girl. You laugh, you cry, you feel good. It's like I said, at its core, it's a movie that says a lot of things. And it's a lot of things in this movie that will resonate with everyone on any kind of level. Like it makes a lot of connections, and that's what I appreciate about it. So thank you, Mark. We can't wait for your next masterpiece. All right, and until then, at the Filmmakers Lounge, we wish everyone peace and love. We out.
Thank you.